This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 167.
The two words we hear most often from CEOs are one, transformational, and two, consigliere. CEOs want partners who can see around corners, guide the ELT and organization through this immense amount of change that we're all dealing with. And they want CHROs who can build the leadership framework that delivers that. We hear less about the technical skills of HR per se and near-term problem solving. Obviously, compensation, talent, succession planning come up as core skills. But what we hear from CEOs is more about the ability to shape the strategy along with them through the people and culture lens.
I'd say we also see a request for business people first, HR second. So that shows up in tons of requests from CEOs for MBA grads with early careers in strategy consulting, technology or finance, non-traditional HR backgrounds. People that speak the language of business can be equal business stature with every other member of the C-suite. Someone who's trusted, mature, who really brings a balance of business strategy, business acumen, and empathy.
How are CEO expectations for CHROs changing? Why are more CEOs looking for CHROs with non-HR backgrounds? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. Over the past 3 years on Future of HR, I've talked with more than 150 CHROs and HR thought leaders about what separates good HR leaders from great ones. And one thing's clear, the best HR leaders see themselves as business leaders with HR expertise. But here's the challenge. Most HR leaders aren't taught to think, communicate, and operate that way. That's why I've created the NextGen HR Accelerator, a four-week intensive, live virtual development experience designed specifically for HR directors and senior managers who want to have more impact and influence. After 4 weeks of focused learning, participants continue their development journey with a 360-degree assessment, two coaching sessions with me, and peer learning with HR leaders from top companies. Over the course of the program, we focus on building your business and financial acumen, thinking strategically, influencing executives with impact, and creating HR strategies that deliver measurable business results. Over 100 HR leaders from companies like Nike, Prudential, AbbVie, McDonald's, Cardinal Health, Verizon, Corning, and more have graduated from the program, and now it's your turn. Our next cohort starts January 27th, and enrollment closes January 14th, with limited space available. This isn't just about your next role. It's about shaping the kind of HR leader you want to be. If you're ready to take the next step in your HR career, visit futureofhr.com. And if you're a CHRO, you already know your team's impact shapes the future of your organization. That's why I also partner with companies to design custom HR capability programs that build these skills at scale. You can learn more at futureofhr.com. And with that, my guests this week are Jennifer Wilson and Brad Warga. Jennifer and Brad are partners and global co-heads of the Human Resources Officers Practice at Heidrick & Struggles, one of the world's leading exec search and leadership advisory firms. Together, they advise CEOs and boards on placing the world's top CHROs, giving them a unique vantage point on how the role of HR leadership is evolving at the highest levels. Through their work with the Fortune 1000 and beyond, Brad and Jennifer have seen firsthand how the expectations of CHROs are shifting from operator to advisor, from HR expert to true business leader and work architect. I have known both Brad and Jennifer for a long time, and what impressed me the most is how clearly they see the art and science of leadership, the data behind what makes great CHROs successful, and the human qualities that make them the trusted partners to CEOs. You'll hear this throughout our conversation as we discuss what CEOs really want from their CHROs and why it's changing, the evolving profile of next-generation HR leaders, and what's shaping the future of HR leadership, and much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this episode, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Jennifer and Brad. Jennifer, Brad, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you both?
Doing great. Good to be here, JP.
Doing well. Thanks, JP.
Yeah, it's great to have you both on the podcast. We've known each other for a long time, so it's fun to have you on and talk about some of the cool research you've been doing, the perspectives you have on not only HR as a function, but really in particular CHROs. That's what we're going to dive into today. Jennifer, we start with you. Let's start with the big picture. You and Brad recruit CHROs at the highest levels. What's been the most dramatic shift you've seen from CEOs and what they're looking for from CHROs over the past few years?
The two words we hear most often from CEOs are one, transformational, and two, consigliere. CEOs want partners who can see around corners, guide the ELT and organization through this immense amount of change that we're all dealing with. And they want CHROs who can build the leadership framework that delivers that. We hear less about the technical skills of HR per se and near-term problem solving. Obviously, compensation, talent, succession planning come up as core skills. But what we hear from CEOs is more about the ability to shape the strategy along with them through the people and culture lens.
I agree with everything you said. I think past experience and the playbooks of the past are not as relevant as they used to be. We constantly hear the need for first principle thinking. And people ask, what does that mean? It's really someone who's a creative problem solver, someone who's intellectually curious, someone who's data driven and agile. That really stems from CEOs needing someone who can design new programs based on the business goals. You have to be operationally excellent, but we're really seeing so much change and so much transformation, as Jennifer mentioned, that you have to be strategic at the same time. I'd say we also see a request for business people first, HR second. So that shows up in tons of requests from CEOs for MBA grads with early careers in strategy consulting, technology or finance, non-traditional HR backgrounds. People that speak the language of business can be equal business stature with every other member of the C-suite. Someone who's trusted, mature, and an unemotional partner who really brings a balance of business strategy, business acumen, and empathy. More and more, these leaders have to have the confidence to speak the truth, but doing so, someone who is an accountable owner of the business. I'm sure we'll get into this, JP, but not enough of these individuals are choosing HR as a path to meet the demand. Jennifer and I stay incredibly busy because half of the Fortune 1000 CHROs have turned over since the pandemic. The average tenure is now 4 years in the role. That's down from pre-pandemic tenure. I'd say based on the new requirements that we just talked about from CEOs plus burnout, turnover in the first half of 2025 is already up 8% over last year. Although it's good news for number twos out there, there is just incredible demand. And this isn't just the Fortune 1000. We're seeing tech founders who are demanding the same skill set. In addition to intellect and education, they're really looking for people that have previous growth experiences with other founders. They do a lot of the back channeling to see if someone was successful. They want to see that person who worked at the large tech companies early in their trajectory because they had to actually design programs while they were hyperscaling. And there's very few people that have the energy and the resilience to go through the growth curve multiple times, especially if you achieve success the first time. So those are just some examples of what we're hearing from CEOs.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in what you're seeing in the shift. And it sounds like it's been pretty dramatic. In fact, if I summarize a little bit, it feels like what you're hearing from a lot of CEOs is academy companies of old, that's great, but may not be the playbook that we need for the future. One. Two, kind of alternative career paths into HR from a business background, which is a very shallow talent pool. There's not going to be a lot of those folks, obviously. And then that last piece, I mean, obviously being a business leader, experiencing high growth, understand first principles or how to build and do things differently. All that to me just sounds like, and I think this has happened since the pandemic, is that expectations have risen just so high for what HR leaders are, much more than they were in the past. And I think it's challenging all of HR because it's not just CHROs, it's their teams as well. Are you seeing that the expectations are now going down to say, hey, that's cool, that's a great CHRO, but I want a great head of talent. I want a total rewards leader. I want a HR VP that also think that way.
Absolutely. The pressure on CHROs to build a great team has never been higher. And they all want successors. And we were talking about this earlier, that the demographic shift that's happening, 20% of the Fortune 1000 CHROs are over 60. They all want a successor in one of those roles. We'll go through 200 to 400 candidates sometimes, staggering number, to try to find that total rewards or talent or big HRBP who also has CHRO potential. And it's not a great news story, but we see a big gap between the number one layer and the number two layer right now. And if you're willing to move physically, geographies, that is a huge differentiator. It'll put you ahead of 90% of the talent pool. If you want to get ahead and keep moving, like, be willing to move.
That's the first tip you're going to get today about your career search. Just double click on it, because I think some people don't believe they have to move or should have to move for their career. Fundamentally, I agree with that to a point, but you have to decide what matters for you. And there are career trade-offs. And I have moved my family way more than I think I would like to have because I want to get ahead or get that next job. And I think it does differentiate you, but also shows a little more of a commitment level to that. It sounds good to stay there, and I understand why a lot of us want to stay. But I totally hear what you're saying, Jennifer, that can make you stand out if you're willing to move to a smaller Midwest city that it's been hard to relocate to or find talent. You might get a really amazing job and get fast-tracked. Brad, what do you think?
I agree with that. So many companies have swung the pendulum back to wanting someone at headquarters near the CEO and in the office multiple days a week. Back to your question too, JP, on just how CHROs should think about building out their teams and getting ready for all these changes that are coming and all the transformation ahead. And I go back to the early days at Google when Laszlo Bock was there, and I give him a lot of credit for hiring some of the early first principled individuals back then with non-traditional backgrounds, whether they came from academia or non-traditional HR backgrounds in other areas of business. But when we did a study, we looked at how many HR leaders spun out from that time. And there's now over 150 of those individuals that are CHROs in the Fortune 1000, which is a sizable percentage, if you think about it. To create more of these individuals, we need more of that thinking from HR leaders who are looking outside of traditional HR, looking to hire more people from business school, more people from strategy consulting, more people from finance and operational areas of the business, and really convincing them to come into HR because it has that full enterprise view of everything happening in the business. We continue to not see enough people choosing it.
One more question here, I guess, for you guys on the CHRO piece, and we're going to talk obviously a lot more about it. But when I think about CHROs versus a CFO or a chief marketing officer or what other C-suite role we have, CFO roles, for instance, are very rigid in terms of what we know success looks like. We know what they're going to deliver. We know there's quarterly annual reports if it's a public company, and there's GAAP and non-GAAP accounting, et cetera. Like, so they kind of have a job. CEOs understand what a CFO is supposed to do. Now, there's some CFOs that, of course, take you public. Some CFOs are more turnarounds. So there's a little nuanced. But CHROs, there isn't a playbook. And I think this is the biggest challenge, because what starts to happen is every CEO wants a snowflake. They want their purple squirrel CHRO that not only fits what you talked about, which I think makes a lot of sense from a business background, but maybe their unique perspective of what a great CHRO should look like versus what the market may bear. Just talk about this idea of the person kind of role fit, because it just feels like great CHROs are really just great people that probably would be successful in almost any C-suite role we put them in.
I would agree. A lot of CEOs struggle with what does good HR look like, and they may not have experienced it in their career, but they're really comparing and contrasting people with the other C-suite executives. Are you naturally analytical? Are you comfortable with data? And again, back to speaking the language of business, can you actually tie your programs and policies to the business strategy more than traditional HR? I mean, we just did a survey, Jennifer and I, to the Fortune 1000, and the two most prevalent KPIs still today are, this is how HR leaders are held accountable. The first one was what happened with the employee opinion scores. And the second one was, how much does HR cost? We've come a long way, but we haven't come far enough. Part of the answer to your question, I think, is HR leaders have to tie their KPIs to the business strategy in driving top line revenue, driving cost out of the business, in things like time to productivity, time to expansion in emerging markets. We didn't see a lot of that in the survey results. And I think that's part of the reason why CEOs have a really hard time evaluating the function, because they're not as interested in the employee opinion scores.
Yeah, and those aren't the right measure, in our opinion. But it's also what keeps getting put on the CHRO's plate is sort of these big, hairy issues. D&I, return to work. What are we doing to get our arms around AI as a company? When the expectations go up too for sort of the unsolvable problems, I think it's sometimes hard for CHROs to win. If that's being put on their plate because there's no other leader who would, to your point, naturally have that in their remit. So a lot of the most difficult things end up in the CHRO's hands, and they don't necessarily have the backing or the background to advance the ball.
Or no one's ever been in that that field before. No one's ever played that game. Like COVID and frankly, AI is almost the same situation. So it's challenging. I'm curious, we talked about the business acumen piece. I mean, that's coming through loud and clear. I think almost every HR leader can say that they know they need to know the business and love the business and be a business leader with HR expertise. Not many people can actually put up the numbers or the programs to show that. I'm just curious more, how does it show up in your search process when you're interviewing? How do you kind of vet that out? Besides, hopefully they're not talking about employee engagement scores. I don't think CHROs typically are thinking like that as much, but maybe they are. But how do you know? How do you get into that?
Yeah, on a daily basis, Jennifer and I are on weekly calls with CEOs who are testing us on why that we're putting candidates forward for them to meet. And I think a lot of them will look at past performance as a predictor of future success. That's clearly nothing new. But what that means is there are CEOs who focus on education, where someone went to school, as a proxy for how well they likely are going to do with creative problem solving and being analytical. Many of them trust other companies' hiring processes and decisions. You know that if you got a job at X, Y, and Z companies, they had to go through a number of assessments and tests to get in. So there's a lot of trust in that. Finding people that have shown the agility and the resilience required by the experiences that they've had. They've gone through the successful growth from 500 to 5,000 people. They worked for a founder who may not have been the most empathetic person, and they found a way to influence that individual. A lot of people have gotten very smart, and AI is enabling this. It's like looking at the chief people officer and saying, let's look at who they hired on their team and let's aggregate the people on their team. How successful have those people gone on to be in business? What were their backgrounds? What kind of business performance did the company achieve while they were there? You can now start to look at that and look for patterns of success. Many of the CEOs are questioning people on, what did you actually do to create enterprise-wide value in the company while you were there? What innovation did you bring? Take me through that business case. Let me reference it with the business leaders who were there while you were there. There's a lot of inspection happening now, a lot of back channel referencing, which has gone rampant. And I think even in the interviews, it's like, when you answer a question, do you start with what the business issue was and how you thought about solving it, doing test and control, influencing and executing, and like being able to walk someone through that whole change process? And doing that confidently and boldly based on the data that you acquired. It's really, I think, the interview and assessment process for chief people officers has changed dramatically since the pandemic.
Yeah, and a surprising number, to Brad's point, on when we're assessing for, you know, tell me about the business conditions you walked into. So many start with an HR story, rather than a business story. And that still surprises me.
So I come in, I walked into the team, we're doing transactional work, compliance, we moved up the ladder.
Yeah, like HR was a mess. And like, I know, but what was going on in the business and how are you helping make that happen?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the not common career path, which I know we'd love to have more of those. And that's a tougher one. But what have been some of the more common HR career paths we're still seeing? It's still head of HR for a business unit, long tenure, and then you're kind of probably likely to be a successor or total rewards or talent. What are you seeing there?
Yes, and we've got some interesting data here. So no surprise, the most common pathway is through the HR ranks you mentioned. So HRBP, usually at a divisional or geographic level at that point, right before CHRO. Talent management, total rewards, or learning and development, that's more rare before becoming CHRO. But we found that talent management role now is often designed as end-to-end talent, and that's often the precursor to becoming a CHRO because they get the enterprise view through that. But the next point may surprise you. So within the Fortune 1000 CHRO group, only 65% of them have exclusively HR careers. Another nearly 30% have experience in HR as well as other functions. And then this is a small number, but growing, and I think we have to pay attention to it, is that 6% have no prior HR experience at all. We've seen some Fortune 100 CHROs even in the last year coming directly to that CHRO role from the GC role with no prior exposure. To me, that says, well, are the CEOs not getting what they need from HR? And I think as a profession, we need to pay attention to that. And I do expect that that 6% might grow. But it's much more common to do that for an internal than somebody coming from the outside. Like, it would be rare to take like a GC from another company into a CH role at company number two. I haven't seen that yet. But that it shows the belief for these that are going outside into HR, that internal cultural knowledge and general leadership skills, to your point, can offset sometimes that less than complete HR specialty, especially if there's a good team underneath.
Yeah, that's really interesting data. Brad?
As we look at that number, 6% of the Fortune 1000, I mean, some of it is that HR leaders and other C-suite leaders have taken on broader remits. So you might have been the general counsel and now you've taken on HR. There's a handful of really talented people that have fallen in love with the HR function, but started their career in the legal side. That happens in finance as well. I think the part that is still so rare is some of our favorite candidate stories out there. My good friend, Neil Nariani, who's currently a two-time chief people officer, he graduated from first undergrad in computer science, MBA from Kellogg, went into marketing, was a demand generation CRM marketer, somehow was convinced to move into HR analytics and HR technology, did that for some prominent hyper-growth companies in Silicon Valley. And because of his natural analytical ability and inclination towards data and just finding the truth and his intellectual curiosity, became a CHRO coming up through the HR analytics and ops side, as well as total rewards, which tends to be a bit more on the analytics side. But he's found tremendous success working with founders because he thinks along the same lines. And other amazing stories that are rare, like a Brian Beldy at SpaceX, who was literally one of the first rocket scientists for Elon before he went into HR. And others, Angela Crossman from Bain, the consulting firm, a strategy consultant, formerly trained, worked in corporate development, went to business school, and now is a multiple-time chief people officer. When you have these kind of profiles as those examples, you can just see CEOs and founders getting so excited because they can relate. I'm not taking away from some of the most amazing people who've come up in HR, like myself, from the very beginning. We continue to not see people coming out of business school and some of these other professions choosing it in big numbers.
And then I guess on the flip side, are there certain experiences CHROs need to have to get the business acumen, or their companies that are doing this well? Do they have the MBAs versus like industrial organizational psychology degrees or other master's degrees? What else are you seeing from the CHROs that do get it and don't start the interview with, my HR team was a mess and now it's not?
Yes. And that business acumen can be built in a number of ways. And I think it's about also mindset of what kind of problems do you want to solve and how are you going to help deliver your partner's P&L, for instance. I think most HRBPs are pretty skilled at that piece. The ones who've grown up in corporate HR, less so. For those in specialty roles or only at corporate, need to get into the business to round themselves out and understand how the business makes money at a granular level to start to deliver and be proactive about their work. And this is slightly related, but I wanted to mention it. Sector familiarity is increasingly valued in what we're seeing with CEOs. So for a while, I would say when I first started in this 7 years ago, there was this view that HR was pretty fungible across industries, and that is changing. So the percentage of external hires from the same industry are growing. It was 23% in 2022, and now it's 38% this year. And I think this suggests that companies are less willing to take a bet on someone learning both the role and the sector simultaneously. There's a real risk aversion. And I think it's because of the amount of change that most companies are dealing with. And the CEOs want somebody who can hit the ground running. And that's usually because they recognize the context. So just an interesting data point there that I wouldn't have thought when I started that we'd end up there.
I would just add that HR leaders that volunteer, and I'm not talking about chief people officers, but you know, one level down, two levels down, people that get involved in cross-functional AI transformation, where they're joining a project team to really think about how the organizational structure, the entire business, how the business functions is going to be transformed, and they're joining that cross-functional team to work on that. That's an example of experience that people put a lot of weight on, people that have worked on mergers and acquisitions and going through everything from due diligence all the way through post-merger integration. That experience stands out. People that have gone to work as a chief of staff, either for the CHRO or for other C-suite leaders, we're still not seeing a lot of rotations in and out of HR. Some companies do that really well, but it's not a large percentage. We'd love to see that more. I think we could really, as part of succession, start to think about how do we rotate people through other parts of the business, similar to like general management rotations.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I really haven't seen a lot of that either. We talk about that, but I've done a lot of CHRO interviews. I don't know that I can think of any CHRO that early later in their career was moved into the business. A lot of CHROs have started early in the business, early in their career, maybe did 5-7 years, sometimes maybe 10, and then move in, move out. Probably the only two that I think about P&L experience that I know really well are Ginger King, you know, Rhonda Morris are probably the two that come to mind later in their career that have had that. I'm sure I'm missing a few others, but it seems more rare. And I think it's an amazing experience because the credibility you gain from that and what you learn is seems like it's a game changer for them. I want to switch a little bit gears because you guys also did some work around where you think the chief people officer will be and where HR is going to be year 2030, which just feels like it's a quarter away because the world's moving so fast. But let's talk a little more about this. In the HR Evolution Report, you talk about this idea of connecting imperatives, envisioning the future while delivering for today and acting with courage, which is a lot. But just think about the context we just have. Talk more about what you're seeing here around this idea of envisioning the future, but connecting these different imperatives.
I'll start with some data there. We have about 16,000 C-suite data points through our proprietary assessment tool called Leadership Signature. And now granted, these are self-assessments of the C-suite doing them on themselves. But what we've seen is that what's called the harmonizer style is by far the most dominant in today's CHRO versus others in the C-suite. And that has gone up every year since we've been measuring, which is about 5 years. So what does that harmonizer profile mean? It's individuals who create positive environments and recognize the efforts of others. They tap into the knowledge and expertise of those around them in a way that enables efficient execution. And they're diligent leaders and maintain high standards for quality. Similar to that, the most dominant self-reported value is flexibility. And that's about thriving in new contexts, leading through change, and persevering in times of uncertainty. What's encouraging about that data is we see CHROs rising to the occasion then of what CEOs are asking. But I think it gets at how the field is changing toward 2030, that those skills are more dominant.
I would agree. One thing we see, JP, is that HR leaders have to get the basics right in order to then get the permission from the business to do the forward-looking strategic projects. It's really hard to do both, but we see a direct correlation between the leader's ability to influence in the C-suite and getting the basics right. It's almost like if you don't get the table stakes right, which many companies unfortunately still haven't gotten those right, then the business is not going to trust you to be thinking 2-3 years out on where they need to be. A lot of this has to do with technology and automation within HR, because it plays a big part in enabling and freeing up HR business partners to be more strategic and to be better business leaders and less transactionally focused on the basics. So they can actually be partnering with the business, thinking about the future. A lot of teams have to get the right talent on the HR team and the right technology to get to the source of truth in the data and the insights. And if you don't have that source of truth, it's really hard to be strategic and convince the business. I think the area that is often not talked about, but it's become kind of the third area around, there's the operational excellence of getting the basics right. There's the foresight and strategy of predicting the future. There's also HR's role in crisis management and the importance that CEOs are placing on culture. And so HR leaders have been in the middle of navigating one crisis after another, many of which divide their workforce, whether it's political division or geopolitical situations. One of the key areas that HR leaders have to get right, and we all saw this in the pandemic because it caught everyone off guard, it was hard to know the right answer. We're seeing a lot of scenario planning and a lot of foresight by HR leaders in partnering with the C-suite and kind of building in that decision-making muscle for times of crisis that are ahead.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the jobs are going to get any easier as we go into the future, unfortunately. Your report's interesting in terms of the HR evolution. It's always hard to know where we're going to go, but you guys talk about just different things that make sense. You talked about orchestrating ecosystems and then, of course, mastering AI, technology. I see those being together, but what are you seeing really right now on the ground with AI? Are you seeing that a lot of CEOs are expecting that CHROs really should be taking the lead in AI? They should have experienced AI. They should be building their own GPTs. They've understand workflow and work design, and those expectations are there? Because I feel like that's not 2030. That's like 2025 that we need to be doing that work or starting that work at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say AI readiness is all over the place. And we hear examples from very basic to pretty sophisticated, and Brad can share some interesting examples from tech, but there's a clear upward trajectory from 2019 till now in requests for, it started with data-driven tech digital strategy, and now AI has been added to that. And we looked at all of our success profiles, hundreds of searches, and that has gone up, but now it's stabilized, suggesting that it's probably just expected. Now, it was desired before, but now it's, if you don't have it, you're not even going to be in the running. We see it in two ways. Yes, AI for the HR function, but I think more importantly at the CHRO level, it's about defining it for the enterprise and how they will approach it as a company. And I think this is where HR can really play a huge role on combining the machine and the human, if you will. Like, yes, let's get more productive in certain ways and more efficient, but let's not lose our humanity in the process. And is it really effective that we're doing these things? It might be faster, but is it really getting us to a better result? And there, I saw a study recently where a group of employees had gotten 40% more productive, but 80% said they had significant burnout. Like, there's a problem there. AI should make work better for each of us. And I think we're at a point in the cycle where it's leading to overwhelm rather than gaining on how we work and making work better and more human.
Yeah. And I would add that many HR leaders are being evaluated on how strong their external awareness, their external networks are, and how much they exist. And it really is about how intellectually curious are they about what other people are doing in AI, what other people are doing around workforce planning. I mean, if you think about what's possible in workforce planning today, we're seeing incredible examples where you're taking, of course, all your internal data, your business forecast, your capacity models, thinking about the growth of the business, and then looking at external data and saying, okay, where does the talent exist? What's the price point of that talent by location? What can I predict with the climate crisis? Or things like, if I have a factory in Southeast Asia and it's getting warmer every year and I can only run the factory at certain times during the day because it's not safe to have people there, or closer to home in the floodplains in the eastern U.S., predicting where we're going to have the next natural disaster and whether you're going to have a sustainable workforce there. There's so much data that you can incorporate into these workforce plans. And that's just, there's so much innovation and evolution happening that I think the best HR leaders are talking to each other and comparing notes. I always like to call LJ Brock because he's always experimenting with something new, including agentic AI to replace the front end of recruiting, which is just fascinating if you get a chance to talk to him. There's this external network, but then there's internally the HR leader's partnership with the board and the kind of discussions they have with the board. And we found some pretty incredible results, not in a good way, that many CHROs just don't have a regular relationship with the board. And they may be involved in comp committee a few times a year, but to really have like those individual board relationships where they're talking about crisis, they're talking about workforce planning and succession, I think there's probably still more work to do there. And so it's really interesting to go beyond the board. Now, many HR leaders are having to think about employee activism. They're having to think about their customers, their investors, and society in general when it comes to their strategy. So to your earlier point, it hasn't gotten easier. It's just the ecosystem has gotten more complicated.
Yeah, we started the conversation talking about the fact that we've had more burnout or retirements, right? And I think part of that is because there is a lot that is on the plate of these CHROs. But that's actually business in general today. I mean, everything you're talking about, those aren't just HR issues. Those are people issues. Those are business issues. Maybe, Jennifer, your point, sometimes they say, well, hey, the HR person doesn't have anything to do because they're not running the marketing campaign that, you know, delivers sales. Well, I think that's challenging. But I do want to leave on a positive note. A lot of people who are listening, who are maybe at the HR director level, who maybe haven't met you both, probably met Heidrick, of course, but maybe haven't met you guys, and would love to get that advice from you. If you're going to mentor a high potential HR director or next gen leader, they said, hey, what is like two or three things I can do, practical advice to get to that CHRO in the next 5 to 10 years, what's that look like?
First, and we talked about it before, there's so much opportunity in HR leadership, and we need to keep filling that pipeline. So distinguish yourself. Be willing to relocate. Get yourself on a cool internal project that is cross-functional, and that will put you ahead of so much of the candidate pool. And the second, and it's related, is think bigger for yourself and for the function. Identify and solve problems that are thorny, that require that cross-enterprise collaboration to solve. Be that orchestrator of solutions. And you can really do that at any level from any role. Take on a role, if possible, outside of HR, preferably in operations. And within HR, if you're a generalist, get a specialist experience. And if you're a specialist, get a generalist experience. The best talent moves around, and that we hear that a lot from our CHRO clients when we're bringing in someone for their team, that they no longer want the pure play of any. They don't want Total Rewards to only have done that. The really primo is to have an HRBP experience along with it. Same goes for talent. And the third is build your external network. Many who reach the CHRO role bemoan the fact that they don't have enough external contacts to phone a friend when they don't know what to do. And building an external network will also help you bring new ideas to your company. That external learning mindset is important and will provoke your own thinking and help you be more proactive.
Brad?
I think everyone should manage their career path really thoughtfully. I think if you have a choice and you can be an HR business partner to engineering leaders of the CTO, we know that there's so much digital transformation happening and more to come with AI. I think that experience is super valuable to be able to prove that you can work with product and engineering leaders, volunteering for special transformation projects where you can get that experience going end to end on enterprise transformation. I think we like to see people moving from centers of excellence to HRBP and back again, showing versatility. I'd say live abroad and overall just build a pattern of success and don't be jumpy in your career. It's amazing how frequently people move, and it's hard to tell what people actually got done in the 12 or 18 months they were with a company. So I think that's still something that's looked at quite a bit. And lastly, I would just say, be curious and lean into AI fast and furiously, because I think it's going to change our world real and already has.
Absolutely. Last question for you both. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Curious what Brad's word is, but mine is advisory. So what I mean by that is that transactional parts of HR will continue to be handled by technology and fewer people. So, and what's left? And frankly, it's the hard and the human stuff of complex problem solving, leading, mentoring, developing people, challenging the status quo. And I hope to see HR take a lead in being great advisors to the business.
Jennifer, mine was renaissance. This is a time of incredible creativity and innovation where we're all going to have a chance to completely rethink our organizational structures, how we do what we do. One of my most fun experiences this summer was bringing in an intern from Brown, who's a neuroscience major and knows more about AI than I may ever learn in my life. And just sitting with her and having her challenge us on how we can use AI in every single component of how we do search work was, it was just incredible to think about what's possible. So I hope we're heading into a renaissance.
Maybe an advisory renaissance. Jennifer, Brad, thank you so much for being on the Future of HR podcast. Great conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks to Brad and Jennifer for joining me to unpack what CEOs really want from CHROs and how the next generation of HR leaders can rise to meet the moment. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Go to futureofhr.com to subscribe and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from 100-plus HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. And you won't want to miss next week's guest, Michelle Nettles, Chief People and Culture Officer at Manpower Group. She's a former lawyer turned HR leader, and she brings powerful insights on how HR can balance profit, people, and purpose while staying deeply human-centric in an AI-driven world. You won't want to miss this conversation, trust me. Thanks again for being part of the Future of HR community.